borders should cease. It was expecting too much of mankind, however, to look for a continued armistice, and the morning arrived when nature once more reasserted herself, and trouble began. Just what it was that prompted the remark, no one knows, but it happened that the idiot did say that he thought that, after all, life on a canal boat had its advantages. Mr. Pedagog, who had come into the dining room in a slightly irritable frame of mind, induced perhaps by Mrs. Pedagog's insistence that, as he was now part proprietor of the house, he should be a little more prompt in making his contributions towards its maintenance, chose to take the remark as implying a reflection upon the way things were managed in the household. "Humph," he said. "I had hoped that your habit of airing your idiotic views had been put aside for once and for all." "Very absurd hope, my dear sir," observed the idiot. "Views that are not aired become musty. Why shouldn't I give them an atmospheric opportunity once in a while?" "Because they are the sort of views to which suffocation is the most appropriate end," snapped the schoolmaster. "Any man who asserts, as you have asserted, that life on a canal boat has its advantages ought to go further and prove his sincerity by living on one." "I can't afford it," said the idiot meekly. "It isn't cheap by any manner of means. In the first place, you can't live happily on a canal boat unless you can afford to keep horses. In fact, canal boat life is a combination of the most expensive luxuries, since it combines yachting and driving with domesticity. Nevertheless, if you will put your mind on it, you will find that with a canal boat for your home, you can do a great many things that you can't do with a house." "I decline to put my mind on a canal boat," said Mr. Pedagog sharply, passing his coffee back to Mrs. Pedagog for another lump of sugar, thereby contributing to that good lady's discomfiture, since before their marriage the mere fact that the coffee had been poured by her fair hand had given it all the sweetness it needed, or at least that was what the schoolmaster had said, and more than once at that. "You are under no obligation to do so," the idiot returned, "though if I had a mind like yours, I'd put it on a canal boat and have it towed away somewhere out of sight. These other gentlemen, however, I think will agree with me when I say that the mere fact that a canal boat can be moved about the country, and is in no sense a fixture anywhere, shows that as a dwelling place it is a superior house. Take this house, for instance. This neighborhood used to be the best in town. It is still far from being the worst neighborhood in town, but it is, as it has been for several years, deteriorating. The establishment of a Turkish bath on one corner and a grocery store on the other has taken away much of that air of refinement which characterized it when the block was devoted to residential purposes entirely. Now, just suppose for a moment that this street were a canal, and that this house were a canal boat. The canal could run down as much as it pleased. The neighborhood could deteriorate eternally. But it could not affect the value of this house as the home of refined people as long as it was possible to hitch up a team of horses to the front stoop and tow it into a better locality. I'd like to wager every man at this table that Mrs. Pedagog wouldn't take 5 minutes to make up her mind to tow this house up to a spot near Central Park if it were a canal boat, and the streets were water instead of a mixture of water, sand, and Belgian blocks." "No takers," said the bibliomaniac. "Tut, tut, tut," ejaculated Mr. Pedagog. "You seem to lose sight of another fact," said the idiot, warming up to his subject. "If man had had the sense in the beginning to adopt the canal boat system of life, and we were used to that sort of thing, it would not be so hard upon us in summer time when we have to live in hotels in order that we and our families may reap the benefits of a period of country life. We could simply drive off to that section of the country where we desired to be. Hotels would not be needed if a man could take his house along with him into the fields, and one phase of life which has more bad than good in it would be entirely obliterated. There is nothing more disturbing to the serenity of a domestic man's mind than the artificial manner of living that prevails in most summer hotels. The nuisance of having to pay bills every Monday morning under the penalty of losing one's luggage would be obviated, and all the